Hi there. Today is the 10th of January and welcome to the Cross the Rubicon channel. Yeah, today I'm going to talk about something different. I'm going to talk about my time in the prison service because I was a prison officer for 11 years in Christchurch. And man, was that a ride. When I first joined the prison service in 2005, I had maybe a naive thinking that it was going to be an honest place, you know, where people are much like the police, you know, where you got to have honesty and integrity and that will get you places. And my God, how wrong I was. And, you know, I soon came to realise that it's pretty corrupt. And I'm not talking so much about staff on the floor, but I'm talking about basically management in the jail. And I remember when I first joined, I was in this hut unit, and it was a 60 bed hut unit in Christchurch Men's Prison, and it was called TP. And I wasn't going to say that, but I will. TP it was. And you know, when you get thrown into this environment where you were confronted with hardened prisoners, and lots of them were rapists, murderers, gang members. The worst of the worst, basically. Drug dealers, drug users. And they were, a lot of them were, well, they were bad, put it that way. Nearly all bad, as it happens in that unit. And I found it very difficult to cope with prisoners when they get in your face and they make, especially when you're new and they want to test you, and they get in your face and they make threats and give all the big bravado in front of their mates, and they're, you know, and then a lot of them are told to do it, but a lot of them do it because they want to make a show of you. I found that difficult to cope with because, you know, being brought up where I was brought up, if someone did that, It was all on. It was a scrap. You know, you'd punch them or they'd punch you, because when someone does that, it's just shy of a punch or a headbutt, and it's all on, and you'd have a big scrap, and to have to go through this day in, day out for a while anyway, because I was new, I was a rookie. It was stressful, and I struggled with it because all I wanted to do when people got in my face was just, well, basically drop them. And because it's human nature. It's human nature to, if someone gets in your face and you just want to, well, you just want to drop them and that's it. But that's the way I was brought up. That's the way I am still. And I'm not going to make any apologies for that, because I think that's right. If someone comes at you, you should be able to defend yourself. Or even, preemptive strike even, before they strike you. But anyway, I did struggle with this. I struggled, and I had a few sleepless nights, I don't mind admitting. But I was one particular prisoner, without naming names, who was from Christchurch. Him and two others murdered a young girl. He was 18, long time ago. Would have been, how long ago would that been now? It would have been maybe 20-odd years ago, maybe 25 years ago. And this particular prisoner is still in jail. The other two got out for, you know, they did their time, and they got out because their behaviour was good, but this one was a particular nasty piece of work. And I remember him, he really singled me out because he liked to put on a bit of a show for the other 59 prisoners. And but he was a gutless coward, this fellow was. He was an absolute gutless coward. And he'd like to get in your face. But once you stepped up back into his face, he soon backed off. And yeah, he gave it to me three, four, five times. And I wasn't so much scared, but I wasn't scared really. I was dying to do something. But I knew if I did anything, I'd be sacked. And there's the stress right there, is not being able to do anything. So basically, they hold all the cards. And this is just the sad truth of the prison service. But anyway, one day he got in my face, and I stepped up to the mark, and he backed off. And not only did he back off, but then he went to my manager, and my manager of TP, without mentioning names, who was. He was an all right kind of bloke. And my PCO, which is a principal corrections officer, he was a female at the time. And he said that I told him to F off. and he felt threatened by me. Now, bear in mind, this man is in jail for murdering an 18-year-old girl. And he was offended that I got back in his face after he'd made these physical threats against me many times, and this one time I got back in his face because I'd had enough. He went and complained, and this is just typical of not all prisoners but some. And yeah, and the manager got me in his office, and he said to me, he said, "Did you tell him to fuck off?" And I said, "No. Not at all." I did. But I wasn't going to admit that. Because, you know, I was still finding my feet. I was still a rookie. And this was like, I don't know, 2 months into the job. So anyway, and he laughed. He knew I did. And the PCO, which was one step down from him, she knew I did as well. But this prisoner and other prisoners started to complain about me, because then I turned the tables and started having a pop at them, and when they started getting nasty to me, I just go and tip their cells over, and looking for something, because that was the only way I could get back at them, by doing stuff like that, which is, you know, it means nothing, but it just pissed them off because I might find something. And you know, some of the prisoners in that unit, they worked outside in the piggery and on the farm and forestry, and they used to come in, you know, every night, and they'd be strip searched at the gate of the jail, strip searched or rubbed down, and then they'd get come to the unit, escorted to the unit by a staff member from the gatehouse, and then we'd rub them down at the gate. And I remember being a rookie. There was two other staff there, and they just sit in the guard room, and I'd go out by myself and started rubbing them down. And man, did I cop some abuse, because there would be like 10 of them, and there'd only be me rubbing down. And, you know, because I was trying to do things right by rubbing these people down, you know, like a rub down. You can't really find anything on a rub down. You really got to strip search them to find anything. And I cop abuse all the time from these prisoners, all the time, and especially when they're in the group, you know, they're just like a pack of dogs, and when they know you're by yourself, they really, really have a go. And yeah, it does play in your head. I mean, because at the end of the day, you're only human, and you know, when I look back and I remember these other prison staff that sat in the guard room and pretended they didn't see, they turn away, because you know, at times, one or two of those staff were just too scared to come out and rub these prisoners down with me, or even be there with me when they copped the abuse. But anyway, you know, these kind of things happened, and they happen all the time in a jail, because they just do. And they were the more experienced prison staff, but and they knew what they could get away with, what they had to do and what they didn't have to do. And when you're a rookie, you try and do things right, what you were taught in prison college kind of thing. And you wanted to do it right the way you were shown up there. But when you get to your unit proper, you're told then by the existing staff, no, forget all what you learned at college, you do it the way we do it. And it was just like a perfunctory effort of a of a strip search, perfunctory effort of a rub down, and basically there was just drugs coming in, drugs and cell phones and all sorts coming into that unit, and they were coming in mostly via the piggery, via this particular group that were coming in, and but what can you do? You buy yourself, and you know, and the thing is, but when you were doing that and you were trying to do it properly, it was like the other staff tried to single you out then as some kind of troublemaker, because you're doing your job as it should be done, and they weren't. And because they're established, they've been there for years, well, you're just on the outer, and that's it. But anyway, I got myself a bit of a reputation because I did, I upset a couple of prisoners in there by doing my job and probably reacting as I would in the street, or as I would have in my younger days, just short of basically dropping them. And anyway, I was moved out. I was moved out of the unit by the manager, because this particular prisoner who murdered this 18-year-old girl kept complaining about me, so I got shipped out. So anyway, I got shipped to a unit called the CSU, the Custody Support Unit, which was the gatehouse, and which was okay. I didn't have so much, because it wasn't a wing, put it that way. And I found out then, as you find out quick, but you only find out these things when you're going along. Most of the people that were in CSU, which are the people who do the searches on cars, and young girls come and see their boyfriends, and family members come and see their boyfriends and husbands or dads or whatever, or sons, who search them, search the handbags and search the cars and the prams. These people are normally the ones who can't do it in the wings. And it's just, you know, you find this out as you go along. And yet, these are the ones that have the biggest chip on their shoulders. These fellas, these are the ones that wear the big green overalls and have all the big things, all the big super things, the handcuffs hanging off their belts, and all these knickknacks. You know, I remember saying, coining the phrase, the more things you've got hanging off your belt, the bigger the wanker you were. And you know, in a way, it was true. And they all talked, these people were all the types that loved to talk the big job, you know. And when things happened, went down in the jail and someone was assaulted and it was all caught on camera, these would be the same people that would look at the camera footage, because, you know, the control room was just above the gatehouse. They're the type of people to look at the camera footage and say, he did that wrong, he did that wrong, and he did this wrong, and he should have done this, and he should have done that. They were all experts, but all armchair experts about how to do it in the wing, although they never did it in the wing, but they were all experts on how to do it. And, you know, I was there a few months, and I was just desperate to get out of there, and because of it was just full of bloody... well, dickheads, really. Fuckwits. Pardon my expression, but there's a few fuckwits there. And what's funny, I'm just going back a few steps. But when I joined the prison, a prison staff said to me, prison staff member said to me, he says, you know, it's not the prisoners you got to look out for, it's the staff. That's what he said to me. And I remember thinking, that's they're just words. They mean nothing. And you soon come to realise that what he said was actually true. It's not the prisoners. It's the staff you've got to look out for. I'm not sure if this is worldwide or whether it's even nationwide in New Zealand, but it was definitely true in Christchurch Men's and Rolleston, as I came to find out later. And in Christchurch Women's too. Now, 3 months into my job, my new job, my new career in the prison. My wife joined the prison service. Now, my wife's 5'1½", and she joined, and she went to Christchurch Women's, and she had a real rough start, mostly because the staff there then were bloody awful, and they were old school, and they treated new staff like absolute dogs. And my wife used to come home, she used to cry when she came home from work, it was good because I could tell her stories, she knew what I was talking about, and vice versa. But it was, it was an interesting ride. But it was, but as we were going on, it was a lot of upset, a lot of stress, and it is a lot of mental stress in the prison service, believe it not or not. And as a lot of prison staff die young, as well. And there's so many prison staff died since I've been there, and dying young, heart attacks and things like that. And I believe that's stress. But because it's a macho environment, people tend not to complain too much about it because of that. And, and because of the rules that come from up on high, not just in Christchurch, but nationwide, where prisoners more or less they are allowed to get in your face and make threats and make physical threats and say things about yourself and your wife and your kids and things like that. That's okay. That's completely okay for prisoners because that's expected. But as soon as you turn around and tell them to fuck off, you're in trouble. I mean, that's when your colleagues, and that's when your colleagues go running to your manager when you say something like that. Tell your manager. And next thing you know, you're being, going through some kind of disciplinary process for telling a prisoner to fuck off. Now, bear in mind, this prisoner might be a gang member. He might be in for rape or murder and, all kinds of despicable things, torture. And you're being holed up for telling him to fuck off. Which I still find this just, just amazes me. But I found it stressful. I just doesn't add up to me. How can someone that does such despicable things, through life, and they're antisocial and they're murderers, they're rapists and they're drug takers and gang members, and yet when you tell them to fuck off, your own people come down on you, your own people, your own side, and they point you out as something as some kind of troublemaker. I think it's a completely natural reaction to tell these people to fuck off. And that's the least they can deserve. I mean, what does it mean, fuck off? It means nothing. Or a hurty word. I'm sure their victims hurt a lot more than being told. I think their victims would have wished to have been told to fuck off instead of being stabbed to death or shot or raped or tortured. But anyway, but this is what you're up against. This is what you're up against. This is the system. And I expect it's much the same in the police. Political correctness is it's draining. It's an unnatural environment where we have to be nice all the time. We have to be some kind of role models, should I say, to people who are mostly, a lot of them are just basically scum. And I can honestly say, I have met some prisoners that should be executed. I can say that hand on heart. I would be happy to walk them to the gallows, because these people should never, ever, ever get out. I'm not saying all. I've met some great prisoners. I've met some great people. And I have. Prisoners. Very intelligent ones, and some with some great, great gifts of carvery and drawing and all kinds of things, very intelligent blokes. But when you come to the gang members, and your murderers, rapists, especially rapists, and your just violent offenders. They're the ones that are in your face all the time. And you know, that can be stressful because you have no powers. You have no powers at all. All you can do is charge them. And you charge them with threatening behaviour, you know, and it's an internal charge, it's not a police charge. And they get, you know, 3 CCs, confined to cells, or they don't get a buy-up for a week or something. A buy-up is like, it's what they called then, I'm not sure about now, but a P119. It was like a buy-up form they used to get once a week. I think then they could spend something like $70 on chocolate bars and crisps and toothpaste and shampoo and all these smellies. And you know, it was very limited, but it was quite expensive as it happened for prisoners. But they used to get that once a week and they used to lose their privileges. But they didn't care. They didn't care about charges. And it was just pathetic, you know. And yet, once you laid a charge on a prisoner, they had it in for you then, a lot of the time. And sometimes, if they were in a gang, they'd make life even more difficult for you. Because remember, you've got to, you know, you go home, you take this home, and then you go back, and you got to look at the same face again. And if he's a gang member, he had other gang members or allies in the wing, then they can make life pretty difficult for you. And remember, because it was a mature environment, you couldn't really complain because it's just part of the job. And you know, a lot of the managers in a jail didn't do it on the floor. And that was a strange thing to me as well. A lot of the managers, not all, but a lot of them, were really bad at being prison staff. But they were great on computers and they were great bureaucrats, you know, pen pushers. And they're the ones that became managers. But they were crap at their core job, being a prison officer. And yet, it was them that made up these rules that they'd never stood by themselves. And they'd never even dealt with prisoners, really, on our level. On a CO, which is a correction officer, which is the lowest, the CO. They'd never really dealt on that level. Or if they did it for a very short amount of time where they got themselves a nice cushy little number and worked themselves up to be managers where they didn't have to deal with the day-to-day kind of activities or, you know, the activities of, you know, unlocking, locking, taking them to the yards and tipping cells over and strip searches and rub downs and blah, 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 you know, feeding them and... They didn't have to deal with that at all, you know. But that just seemed, well, that was the process. These people were no good at their job, being their core job, being a prison officer, but they rose through the ranks. And that's just the way it is. And it's still like that today. But yeah, but corruption. There is lots of corruption in the jail. And Christchurch Men's is... one of, I would say Christchurch Men's is pretty tame compared to places like Rumata and probably Hawke's Bay Prison and right up the far north. I forgot its name now, the new prison right up the far north. But yeah, those North Island prisoners and prisons, there, I think there's much more corruption happens up there because there's much more of a bro culture up there, especially in the smaller communities where, like, well, take Hawke's Bay, for instance, being, you know, Napier and Hastings, and a lot of the staff there are related to the prisoners, and Hawke's Bay would be mostly mob, mongrel mob, and when they go to jail, they will have their cozy bros as prison staff looking after them, and, you know, it's almost like a conflict of interest, isn't it? And it is. Not so much in Christchurch, because Christchurch is obviously much bigger. But you know, when you got these small communities, this kind of thing happens.
where you've got the cousins looking after, well, the cousins. And this is quite common throughout New Zealand. But the bigger the town, like Auckland and Wellington, Christchurch, the less chance you've got of that, but you will have it. But yeah, there's so much stuff comes into the jail. Comes in via staff. Bringing it in. Not all, but some. Corrupt staff. Girlfriends. Visitors. Dads, brothers. During visiting times. It's difficult to do, but they do. They get it in. And prisoners that go out to work, bring it back in. Sometimes they go to hospital. And they might have family come to visit them in hospital. And they bring it back into the prison. And the way they bring this stuff back into the jail now, for people who don't know much about prisons, it's an absolute alien environment. It's an alien environment. It's quite unique. But prisoners hide things basically up their arse. Even cell phones. And even weapons. They stick things up their ass. I mean, pardon my French, but I could say anus, but it's up the bum, put it that way. And that's where they store things. And the tougher prisoners, you know, the tougher gang members, they get weaker prisoners in wings to hold things for them. Normally, up their jacksy. Or else... And that's the prison. But anyway, I'm just going to finish this off with how corrupt the jail is. And when you grease up to managers, grease up big time what you can get away with. Now, I was in Christchurch Men's for 7 years. And I did get myself in trouble with the managers because I pointed out things. But I'm going to talk about that in a later podcast. But I'm going to carry on this because it needs to be talked about. Because I was screwed over big time. And so was my wife. And we're not in the job anymore, so I can say it. I'm not bound by the code of conduct anymore. And that's why I'm saying this. But when I was in Rolleston Prison, I was there for my last seven and a half years, I think it was. Seven and a half years. I was in the Child Sex Offenders Unit in Rolleston. Now, there was a staff member who was in another unit. We didn't get on at all. In fact, I thought he was a bit of a prick. And obviously he didn't like me. And lots of people suspected he was dodgy. Even I suspected he was dodgy. And he'd been moved out of Christchurch Men's because they believed he was dodgy, so they shipped him out to Rolleston. But he was in another unit. And anyway, he was there for years, and then he got shipped back to Christchurch Men's. And he was there for less than a year, and then he got shipped back to Rolleston. But this time he came to my unit. Now, this bloke, you know, now we had to work together. So I wasn't particularly in a good place with management at the time. My manager there hated my guts because I used to challenge her. But I'll talk about her later. She was awful. And I still think she's awful. Not only an awful manager, but a horrible human being. She's a sociopath. Maybe even a psychopath. But anyway. But this bloke come to our unit. And there was one or two blokes. There was an ex-cop there. That became a prison officer. He was in the police for 20-odd years. Now, he really didn't like this bloke. Didn't trust him at all. And it's funny because some of the prisoners heard this fella was coming back from Christchurch Men's, and he was coming to our unit. And a couple of these gang members that were in our unit for child sex offending were really happy that this bloke was coming. And they showed how happy they were, you know, by saying, oh, great, this bloke's coming, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he came. And, you know, we had to work with each other, so we shook hands and buried the hatchet. And, yeah, he was there, you know, it would have been about 2 years later, and there was some dodgy goings on that were happening. It happened in the unit. Things were coming in, like cell phones and stuff like that, and then cigarettes and other stuff. But, you know, nobody can pin anything on him. So I left, and I was transferred to Christchurch Women's Prison on behalf of my manager and the prison manager of Rolleston, because I wasn't very popular. But that's a story I'll go into in the next podcast, or the next one after that. But this fella, he was out one night and he was in the pub. And bear in mind, he was dodgy. Everyone thought he was dodgy. And he was in the pub, and he was caught on CCTV in the pub, sitting next to a woman who had a handbag on the seat next to this prison officer, who'd been in the job for then about maybe 10 years. And it could be quite clearly seen, his hand going into her bag, picking something out of her bag. He looked at it and put it in his pocket. Then he went back into her bag again, looked at it, wherever it was, and put it in his pocket. And then he got up and walked out. Now, obviously, he wasn't aware that there was a CCTV in that pub. And anyway, this woman, she makes claim that she'd been robbed while in the pub. So they go through the cameras, CCTV, go to the police, Christchurch Police, and they put it on their website. And the police website. And what happened then was they put it out there and they said, "Does anyone recognise this man?" And he was there and he had a big beard, baldy head, big beard. And boom, the police was flooded with calls who knew this man, and lo and behold, it was this bloke. And what he'd taken was cash and a cell phone, would you believe? And cell phones are very, very prized in the jail. And from what I believe, from what I've been told, allegedly, that when he was questioned by the police, I'm not sure about arrested, but when he was questioned by the police, the phone was gone. So you can only imagine where that went. Maybe in the prison, who knows? And he had to buy this woman a new phone. So where did the old one go? And the cash that went missing out of her purse, he had to pay that back as well. But what's strange about this is this bloke was he was suspected by other staff on his level, but yet the managers in the jail thought he was marvellous. They thought he was marvellous. And yet they were aware of people's suspicions about him. But when he was caught for this, nothing happened to him, would you believe? He never lost his job. No disciplinary charges at all, even though he was caught in the act, on camera, on the police website, stealing cash and a cell phone out of someone's purse. And that man is still in the job. That is the state. Well, it's the state of Canterbury Corrections anyway. So I'm going to close this off here, and I'm going to go into much more detail on my second podcast. Like I've said, I've rehearsed nothing, and I've got nothing written down. I'm just telling you a story, and hopefully, hopefully it's interesting. For 2 years, it should be interesting. But It's an alien environment, the prison, and the smells, horrible smells in the jail. Smells that you can't get out. It's like going into a burning house. The smells you can never get out of your nose. But it was, I mean, do you know what? I was there for 11 years. I don't even think I slept a decent night in 11 years. In the end, I left. But I think I just came to realise it just wasn't me. Wasn't me at all. Easy on the body. A lot easier than laying bricks. But man, was it hard on the head. It was hard on the head. You know, maybe it's because I got thin skin. I don't know. But some people have got thicker skin. I mean, I don't even claim to have thick skin. But it's not the place for anyone who's thin-skinned at all. You know, and you've got to be able to handle abuse and not react. And that just goes against your nature. It goes against human nature. You know, someone gets in your face, you've got to react. Because that's the way you're made. That's the way you're supposed to react. So it's a completely unnatural environment. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there. And hopefully you found that interesting. And I'm not sure how you can get back and put comments on this. But leave a comment and tell me how interesting it was, and I'll tell you a whole lot more if you like this. But we're going to call this podcast one, my time of my 11 years in Christchurch Men's and Rolleston Prison, and my wife's time too, and how she suffered because of my actions. But my actions weren't bad. My actions were good. But it was the upper management's actions that were bad. And, you know, anyway, I'll leave that with you. But that's me for today. Tell me what you think in the comments. And tell me if you want to hear more. Because it's interesting. This is an interesting ride. Right, that's me. Cross the Rubicon. 10th of January. And more on this on the Canterbury Corrections of New Zealand and the prison service in New Zealand. Hopefully come in the next podcast. See you later. Hi there. Today is the 10th of January. And welcome to the Cross the Rubicon channel. Yeah, today I'm going to talk about something different. I'm going to talk about my time in the prison service, because I was a prison officer for 11 years in Christchurch. And man, was that a ride. When I first joined the prison service in 2005, I had maybe a naive thinking that it was going to be an honest place, you know, where people, much like the police, you know, where you got to have honesty, integrity, and that will get you places. And my God, how wrong I was. And, you know, I soon came to realise that it's pretty corrupt. And I'm not talking so much about staff on the floor, but I'm talking about basically management in the jail. And I remember when I first joined, I was in this hut unit, and it was a 60-bed hut unit in Christchurch Men's Prison, and it was called TP, and I wasn't going to say that, but I will. TP it was. And you know, when you get thrown into this environment where you were confronted with hardened prisoners, and lots of them were rapists, murderers, gang members, the worst of the worst, basically. Drug dealers, drug users. And they were, a lot of them were, well, they were bad, put it that way. Nearly all bad, as it happens in that unit. And I found it very difficult to cope with prisoners when they get in your face and they make, especially when you're new and they want to test you, and they get in your face and they make threats and give all the big bravado in front of their mates, and they're, you know, and then a lot of them are told to do it, but a lot of them do it because they want to make a show of you. I found that difficult to cope with because, you know, being brought up where I was brought up, if someone did that, it was all on. It was a scrap. You know, you'd punch them or they'd punch you, because when someone does that, it's just shy of a punch or a headbutt, and it's all on, and you'd have a big scrap. And to have to go through this day in, day out, for a while anyway, because I was new, I was a rookie. It was stressful, and I struggled with it, because all I wanted to do when people got in my face was just, well, basically drop them. Because it's human nature. It's human nature to, if someone gets in your face, and you just want to, well, you just want to drop them, and that's it. But that's the way I was brought up. That's the way I am still. And I'm not going to make any apologies for that, because I think that's right. If someone comes at you, you should be able to defend yourself, or even preemptive strike, even before they strike you. But anyway, I did struggle with this. I struggled, and I had a few sleepless nights, I don't mind admitting. But I was one particular prisoner, without naming names, who was from Christchurch. Him and two others murdered a young girl who was 18, long time ago. It would have been, how long ago would that been now? It would have been maybe 20 odd years ago, maybe 25 years ago. And this particular prisoner is still in jail. The other two got out for, you know, they did their time, and they got out because their behaviour was good, but this one was a particular nasty piece of work. And I remember him, he really singled me out because he'd like to put on a bit of a show for the other 59 prisoners. But he was a gutless coward, this fellow was. He was an absolute gutless coward. And he'd like to get in your face, but once you stepped up back into his face, he soon backed off. And yeah, he gave it to me three, four, five times. And I wasn't so much scared, but I wasn't scared really. I was dying to do something. But I knew if I did anything, I'd be sacked. And there's the stress right there. It's not being able to do anything. So basically, they hold all the cards. And this is just the sad truth of the prison service. But anyway, one day he got in my face, and I stepped up to the mark, and he backed off. And not only did he back off, but then he went to my manager, and my manager of TP, without mentioning names, who was. He was an all right kind of bloke. And my PCO, which is a principal corrections officer, he was a female at the time. And he said that I told him to F off. And, you know, and he felt threatened by me. Now, bear in mind, this man is in jail for murdering an 18-year-old girl. And he was offended that I got back in his face after he'd made these physical threats against me many times, and this one time I got back in his face because I'd had enough. He went and complained, and this is just typical of not all prisoners, but some. And yeah, and the manager got me in his office, and he said to me, he said, "Did you tell him to fuck off?" And I said, "Nope. Not at all." I did. But I wasn't going to admit that. Because, you know, I was still finding my feet. I was still a rookie. And this was like, I don't know, 2 months into the job. So anyway, and he laughed. He knew I did. And the PCO, which was one step down from him, she knew I did as well. But this prisoner and other prisoners started to complain about me, because then I turned the tables and started having a pop at them. And when they started getting nasty to me, I just go and tip their cells over and, you know, looking for something. Because that was the only way I could get back at them, by doing stuff like that, which is, you know, it means nothing. But it just pissed them off because I might find something. And, you know, some of the prisoners in that unit, they worked outside in the piggery and on the farm and forestry. And they used to come in, you know, every night. And they'd be strip searched at the gate of the jail, strip searched or rubbed down. And then they'd get come to the unit, escorted to the unit by a staff member from the gatehouse. And then we'd rub them down at the gate. And I remember being a rookie. There was two other staff there, and they'd just sit in the guard room, and I'd go out by myself and started rubbing them down. And man, did I cop some abuse, because there would be like 10 of them, and there'd only be me rubbing down. And, you know, because I was, I don't know, I was trying to do things right by rubbing these people down, you know, like a rub down. You can't really find anything on a rub down. You really got to strip search them to find anything. And I cop abuse all the time from these prisoners, all the time. And especially when they're in the group, you know, they're just like a pack of dogs. And when they know you're by yourself, they really, really have a go. And yeah, it does play in your head. I mean, because at the end of the day, you're only human. And, you know, when I see these, when I look back and I remember these other prison staff that sat in the guard room and pretended they didn't see, they turn away because, you know, at times one or two of those staff were just too scared to come out and rub these prisoners down with me, or even be there with me when they copped the abuse. But anyway, you know, these kind of things happened, and they happen all the time in a jail because they just do. And they were the more experienced prison staff, and they knew what they could get away with, what they had to do and what they didn't have to do. And when you're a rookie, you try and do things right, what you were taught up in the prison college kind of thing. And you wanted to do it right the way you were shown up there. But when you get to your unit proper, you're told then by the existing staff, no, forget all what you learned at college. You do it the way we do it. And it was just like a perfunctory kind of perfunctory effort of a strip search, perfunctory effort of a rub down. And basically there was just drugs coming in, drugs and cell phones and all sorts coming into that unit. And they were coming in mostly via the piggery, via this particular group that were coming in. And, you know, but what can you do? You're by yourself. And, you know, and the thing is, but when you were doing that and you were trying to do it properly, it was like the other staff tried to single you out then as some kind of troublemaker, because because you're doing your job as it should be done, and they weren't. And because they're established, they've been there for years, well, you're just on the outer, and that's it. But anyway, I got myself a bit of a reputation because I did. I upset a couple of prisoners in there by doing my job and probably reacting as I would in the street, or as I would have in my younger days, just short of basically dropping them. And anyway, I was moved out. I was moved out of the unit by the manager, because this particular prisoner who murdered this 18-year-old girl kept complaining about me, so I got shipped out. So anyway, I got shipped to a unit called the CSU, the Custody Support Unit, which was the gatehouse, and which was okay. You know, I didn't have so much, because it wasn't a wing, put it that way. And I found out then, as you find out quick, but you only find out these things when you're going along. Most of the people that were in CSU,
which are the people who do the searches on cars, and young girls come and see their boyfriends, and family members come and see their boyfriends and husbands or dads or whatever, or sons, who search them, search the handbags and search the cars and the prams. These people are normally the ones who can't do it in the wings. And it's just, you know, you find this out as you go along. And yet, these are the ones that have the biggest chip on their shoulders. These fellas. These are the ones that wear the big green overalls and have all the big things, all the big super things, the handcuffs hanging off their belts and all these knickknacks. You know, I remember saying, coining the phrase, the more things you've got hanging off your belt, the bigger the wanker you were. And you know, in a way, it was true. And they all talk. These people were all the types that would love to talk the big job, you know. And when things happened, went down in the jail and someone was assaulted and it was all caught on camera, these would be the same people that would look at the camera footage because, you know, the control room was just above the gatehouse. They're the type of people to look at the camera footage and say, he did that wrong, he did that wrong, and he did this wrong, and he should have done this, and he should have done that. They were all experts, but all armchair experts about how to do it in the wing, although they never did it in the wing, but they were all experts on how to do it. And, you know, I was there a few months and I was just desperate to get out of there because it was just full of bloody, well, dickheads, really. Fuckwits. Pardon my expression, but there's a few fuckwits there. And what's funny, I'm just going back a few steps, but when I joined the prison, a prison staff said to me, prison staff member said to me, he says, you know, it's not the prisoners you got to look out for, it's the staff. That's what he said to me. And I remember thinking, that's they're just words, they mean nothing. And you soon come to realise that what he said was actually true. It's not the prisoners, it's the staff you've got to look out for. I'm not sure if this is worldwide or whether it's even nationwide in New Zealand, but it was definitely true in Christchurch Men's and Rolleston, as I came to find out later, and in Christchurch Women's too. Now, 3 months into my job, my new career in the prison, my wife joined the prison service. Now, my wife's 5'1½", and she joined, and she went to Christchurch Women's, and she had a real rough start, mostly because the staff there then were bloody awful, and they were old school, and they treated new staff like absolute dogs. And she used to, my wife used to come home, you know, she used to cry when she came home from work. It was good because she, you know, I could tell her stories. She knew what I was talking about and vice versa. But it was, it was an interesting ride. But it was, but as we were going on, it was a lot of upset, a lot of stress. And it is a lot of mental stress in the prison service, believe it not or not. And as a lot of prison staff die young, you know, as well. And there's so many prison staff died since I've been there, and dying young, heart attacks and things like that. And I believe that's stress. But because it's a macho environment, people tend not to complain too much about it because of that. And, you know, and because of the rules that come from up on high, not just in Christchurch, but nationwide, you know, where prisoners more or less are allowed to get in your face and make threats and make physical threats and say things about yourself and your wife and your kids and things like that. That's okay. That's completely okay for prisoners because that's expected. But as soon as you turn around and tell them to fuck off, you're in trouble. I mean, that's when your colleagues
And that's when your colleagues go running to your manager when you say something like that. Tell your manager. And next thing you know, you're being, you know, going through some kind of disciplinary process for telling a prisoner to fuck off. Now, bear in mind, this prisoner might be a gang member. He might be in for rape or murder and, you know, all kinds of despicable things, torture. And, you know, and you're being holed up for telling him to fuck off. Which I still find today this just, I don't know, just amazes me. But I found it stressful. I just doesn't add up to me. You know, how can someone that does such despicable things, you know, through life, and they're antisocial and they're murderers, they're rapists and they're drug takers and gang members, and yet when you tell them to fuck off, your own people come down on you, your own people, your own side. And they point you out as something, you know, as some kind of troublemaker. I think it's a completely natural reaction to tell these people to fuck off. And that's the least they can deserve. I mean, what does it mean, fuck off? It means nothing. Or a hurty word. I'm sure their victims hurt a lot more than being told. I think their victims would have wished to have been told to fuck off instead of being stabbed to death or shot or raped or tortured. But anyway. But this is what you're up against. This is the system. And I expect it's much the same in the police. Political correctness is just, it's draining. It's an unnatural environment where we have to be nice all the time. We have to be some kind of role models, should I say, to people who are mostly, a lot of them are just basically scum. And I can honestly say, I have met some prisoners that should be executed. I can say that hand on heart. I would be happy to walk them to the gallows, because these people should never, ever, ever get out. Not saying all. I've met some great prisoners. I've met some great people. And I have. Prisoners. Very intelligent ones, and some with some great, great gifts of carvery and drawing and all kinds of things, you know. Very intelligent blokes. And but when you come to the gang members and your murderers, rapists, especially rapists, and you know, just violent offenders, they're the ones that are in your face all the time. And you know, that can be stressful because you have no powers. You have no powers at all. All you can do is charge them. And you charge them with threatening behaviour, you know, and it's an internal charge, it's not a police charge. And they get, you know, 3 CCs, confined to cells, or they don't get a buy-up for a week or something. A buy-up is like, it's what they called then, I'm not sure about now, but a P119. It was like a buy-up form they used to get once a week. I think then they could spend something like $70 on chocolate bars and crisps and toothpaste and shampoo and all these smellies. And you know, it was very limited, but it was quite expensive, as it happened, for prisoners. But they used to get that once a week, and they used to lose their privileges. But they didn't care. They didn't care about charges. And it was just pathetic, you know. And yet, once you laid a charge on a prisoner, they had it in for you then, a lot of the time. And sometimes, if they were in a gang, they'd make life even more difficult for you. Because remember, you've got to, you know, you go home, you take this home, and then you go back, and you got to look at the same face again. And if he's a gang member, he had other gang members or allies in the wing, then they can make life pretty difficult for you. And remember, because it was a mature environment, you couldn't really complain, because it's just part of the job. And, you know, a lot of the managers in a jail didn't do it on the floor. And that was a strange thing to me as well. A lot of the managers, not all, but a lot of them, were really bad at being prison staff, but they were great on computers and they were great bureaucrats, you know, pen pushers. And they're the ones that became managers, but they were crap at their core job, being a prison officer. And yet, it was them that made up these rules that they'd never stood by themselves, and they'd never even dealt with prisoners really on our level, on a CO, which is a correction officer, which is the lowest, the CO. They'd never really dealt on that level, or if they did it for a very short amount of time, where they got themselves a nice cushy little number and worked themselves up to be managers, where they didn't have to deal with the day-to-day kind of activities, or, you know, the activities of, you know, unlocking, locking, taking them to the yards, and tipping cells over, and strip searches, and rub downs, and blah blah blah, you know, feeding them, and they didn't have to deal with that at all, you know. But that just seemed, well, that was the process. These people were no good at their job, being their core job, being a prison officer, but they rose through the ranks, and that's just the way it is, and it's still like that today. But yeah, but corruption. There is lots of corruption in the jail. And Christchurch Men's is one of, I would say Christchurch Men's is pretty tame compared to places like Rumata and probably Hawke's Bay Prison. And right up the far north, I forgot its name now, the new prison right up the far north. But yeah, those North Island prisoners and prisons, I think there's much more corruption happens up there, because there's much more of a bro culture up there, especially in the smaller communities where, like, well, take Hawke's Bay, for instance, being, you know, Napier and Hastings, and a lot of the staff there are related to the prisoners, and Hawke's Bay would be mostly mob, mongrel mob, and when they go to jail, they will have their cozy bros as prison staff looking after them. And, you know, it's almost like a conflict of interest, isn't it? And it is. Not so much in Christchurch, because Christchurch is obviously much bigger. But you know, when you got these small communities, this kind of thing happens. Where you've got the cozies looking after, well, the cozies. And this is quite common throughout New Zealand. But the bigger the town, like Auckland and Wellington, Christchurch, the less chance you've got of that, but you will have it. But yeah, there's so much stuff comes into the jail. Comes in via staff. Bringing it in. Not all, but some. Corrupt staff. Girlfriends, visitors, dads, brothers, during visiting times. It's difficult to do, but they do. They get it in. And prisoners that go out to work, bring it back in. Sometimes they go to hospital. And they might have family come to visit them in hospital. And they bring it back into the prison. And the way they bring this stuff back into the jail now, for people who don't know much about prisons, it's an absolute alien environment. It's an alien environment. It's quite unique. But prisoners hide things basically up their ass, even cell phones and even weapons. They stick things up their ass. I mean, pardon my French, but I could say anus, but it's up their bum, put it that way. And that's where they store things. And the tougher prisoners, you know, the tougher gang members, they get weaker prisoners in wings to hold things for them. Normally, up their jacksie. Or else. And that's the prison. But anyway, I'm just going to finish us off with how corrupt the jail is. And when you grease up to managers, grease up big time what you can get away with. Now, I was in Christchurch Men's for 7 years. And I did get myself in trouble with the managers because I pointed out things. But I'm going to talk about that in a later podcast. But I'm going to carry on this because it needs to be talked about. Because I was screwed over big time. And so was my wife. And we're not in a job anymore, so I can say it. I'm not bound by the code of conduct anymore. And that's why I'm saying this. But when I was in Rolleston Prison, I was there for my last seven and a half years, I think it was. Seven and a half years. I was in the Child Sex Offenders Unit in Rolleston. Now, there was a staff member who was in another unit. And we didn't get on at all. In fact, I thought he was a bit of a prick. And obviously he didn't like me. And lots of people suspected he was dodgy. Even I suspected he was dodgy. And he'd been moved out of Christchurch Men's because they believed he was dodgy, so they shipped him out to Rolleston. But he was in another unit. And anyway, he was there for years. And then he got shipped back to Christchurch Men's. And he was there for less than a year. And then he got shipped back to Rolleston. But this time he came to my unit. Now, this bloke, you know, now we had to work together. So I wasn't particularly in a good place with management at the time. My manager there hated my guts because I used to challenge her. But I'll talk about her later. She was awful. And I still think she's awful. Not only an awful manager, but a horrible human being. She's a sociopath. Maybe even a psychopath. But anyway. But this bloke come to our unit. And there was one or two blokes. There was an ex-cop there. That became a prison officer. He was in the police for 20-odd years. Now, he really didn't like this bloke. Didn't trust him at all. And it's funny because some of the prisoners heard this fella was coming back from Christchurch Men's and he was coming to our unit. And a couple of these gang members that were in our unit for child sex offending were really happy that this bloke was coming. And they showed how happy they were, you know, by saying, oh, great, this bloke's coming, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he came. And, you know, we had to work with each other. So we shook hands and buried the hatchet. And, yeah, he was there, you know, it would have been about 2 years later, and there was some dodgy goings-on that were happening. It happened in the unit. Things were coming in, like cell phones and stuff like that, and then cigarettes and other stuff. But, you know, nobody can pin anything on him. So, I left. And I was transferred to Christchurch Women's Prison on behalf of my manager and the prison manager of Rolleston because I wasn't very popular. But that's a story I'll go into in the next podcast or the next one after that. But this fella, he was out one night and he was in a pub. And bear in mind, he was dodgy. Everyone thought he was dodgy. And he was in a pub. And he was caught on CCTV in the pub, sitting next to a woman who had a handbag on the seat next to this prison officer, who'd been in the job for then about maybe 10 years. And it could be quite clearly seen, his hand going into her bag, picking something out of her bag, he looked at it and put it in his pocket. Then he went back into a bag again, looked at it, wherever it was, and put it in his pocket. And then he got up and walked out. Now, obviously, he wasn't aware that there was a CCTV in that pub. And anyway, this woman She makes a claim that she'd been robbed while in the pub. So they go through the cameras, CCTV, go to the police, Christchurch Police, and they put it on their website. And they put it on a website, and the police website. And what happened then was they put it out there and they said, does anyone recognise this man? And he was there and he had a big, big beard, baldy head, big beard. And boom, the police was flooded with calls who knew this man, and lo and behold, it was this bloke. And what he'd taken was cash and a cell phone, would you believe? And cell phones are very, very prized in the jail. And from what I believe, from what I've been told, allegedly, that when he was questioned by the police, I'm not sure about arrested, but when he was questioned by the police, the phone was gone. So you can only imagine where that went. Maybe in the prison, who knows? And he had to buy this woman a new phone. So where did the old one go? And the cash that went missing out of her purse, he had to pay that back as well. But what's strange about this is this bloke was he was suspected by other staff on his level. But yet the managers in the jail thought he was marvellous. They thought he was marvellous. And yet they were aware of people's suspicions about him. But when he was caught for this, nothing happened to him, would you believe? He never lost his job. No disciplinary charges at all, even though he was caught in the act, on camera, on the police website, stealing cash and a cell phone out of someone's purse. And that man is still in the job. That is the state. Well, it's the state of Canterbury Corrections anyway. So I'm going to close this off here. And I'm going to go into much more detail on my second podcast. Like I've said, I've rehearsed nothing and I've got nothing written down. I'm just telling you a story. And hopefully, hopefully it's interesting for 2 years. It should be interesting. But it's an alien environment, the prison. And the smells, horrible smells in the jail. Like, the smells that you can't get out. It's like going into a burning house. The smells you can never get out of your nose. But it was, I mean, do you know what? I was there for 11 years. I don't even think I slept a decent night in 11 years. In the end, I left. But I think I just came to realise it just wasn't me. Wasn't me at all. Easy on the body. A lot easier than laying bricks. But man, was it hard on the head. It was hard on the head. You know, maybe it's because I got thin skin. I don't know. But some people have got thicker skin. I mean, I don't even claim to have thick skin. But it's not the place for anyone who's thin-skinned at all. You know, and you've got to be able to handle abuse and not react. And that just goes against your nature. It goes against human nature. You know, someone gets in your face, you've got to react. Because that's the way you're made. That's the way you're supposed to react. So it's a completely unnatural environment. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there. And hopefully you found that interesting. And I'm not sure how you can get back and put comments on this. But leave a comment and tell me how interesting it was. And I'll tell you a whole lot more if you like this. But we're going to call this podcast one, My Time of my 11 years in Christchurch Men's and Rolleston Prison. And and my wife's time too, and how she suffered because of my actions. But my actions weren't bad. My actions were good. But it was the upper management's actions that were bad. And, you know, anyway, I'll leave that with you. But that's me for today. Tell me what you think in the comments. And tell me if you want to hear more. Because it's interesting. This is an interesting ride. Right, that's me. Cross the Rubicon. 10th of January. More on this on the Canterbury Corrections of New Zealand and the prison service in New Zealand. Hopefully come in the next podcast. See you later.